Should Donald Trump get the Nobel Peace Prize? Is this seriously a question? Are we seriously even talking about this? Hey everybody, welcome to In the Truck Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Dennis Brown. The man put an end to a war that lasted 70 years that included the most repressive, horrendous, communist, I don't know what you even call it, state on the planet. That 8 or 9 other presidents had tried to deal with and couldn't. Took a whole new tactic. The old tactic, by the way, was North Korea would act crazy and America and Europe would pay them money. And the new tactic Trump used was to make fun of them and to let them know that there was no money coming. And then he kind of used China on the back end to put the screws to them a little bit. What the peace deal in North Korea is really about, by the way, is that Kim Jong-un realizes that his time is short. And he can't maintain what he's doing. So he's got to do something different. So this is what he's come up with. He's going to try to negotiate some kind of deal where his family maintains some kind of control. And put an end to the thing. So does Trump deserve a Nobel Peace Prize for putting an end to quite possibly the most horrendous near conflict imaginable? Yes he does. But you know, we do live in an era when Rachel Dolezal becomes the head of the NAACP in Washington State, and Sean King's on TV talking about issues for the black community, and Bruce Jenner wins Woman of the Year. So you know, you don't necessarily need to be the thing that you are talking about to be recognized and win awards. So perhaps actually avoiding war and perhaps actually creating a peace in a place that hasn't seen it in a long time, maybe that's not how you get the Nobel Peace Prize. But then if you look through the Nobel Peace Prize awards, who they've given them to, you could make the case that they live in fantasy land. So last year, the International Campaign to Abolish Nuclear Weapons won the Nobel Peace Prize. Apparently for abolishing nuclear weapons, which they didn't do. Colombian president wanted for ending a civil war there. Silliness. Some group of Tunisia won for having, I don't know, democracy in Tunisia, whatever. The girl who got shot in the head and then fought for girls to get to go to school in Afghanistan while not being in Afghanistan, won. And while I agree she's a courageous young lady and certainly principled, she's not in the end going to be successful there. The Taliban is taking back over Afghanistan and girls will go back to not being in school. In 2013, the Organization for the Prohibition of Chemical Weapons won the Nobel Peace Prize, and I quote, for its extensive efforts to eliminate chemical weapons. I mean, not effective efforts. You might as well give it to me. I've done just as much. The European Union won in 2012. You know, they went on after that to go ahead and bomb the crap out of Northern Africa and kill Gaddafi and overthrow his government. And never mind. In 2009... a guy won the Nobel Peace Prize. He went on to kill hundreds of people, innocent people, under his orders with drone strikes, and assassinate one of his own citizens without any due process whatsoever, who was also a minor. So that's fun. You might know him, Barack Obama. In 2007, Al Gore won for making a movie that was entirely filled with lies. Fake science and stupid fake predictions in a movie to convince the world that we were at the precipice of doomsday won Al Gore the Nobel Peace Prize. Good job there. Muhammad Yunus and Grameen Bank won in 2006. They come up with this great thing called micro-lending, where they would lend large groups of people small amounts of money in developing countries. And the theory on that was that the groups of people would pay the money back. And it would be great because it would lift lots of people out of poverty. That didn't work. They failed miserably, but they won the Nobel Peace Prize for it.
I'm just skipping over some of the boring ones. There's one I can get behind. The International Campaign to Ban Landmines. In 1997 won. I'm for that. I'm all for no landmines. Yasser Arafat won in 94. You know, the terrorist. Nelson Mandela and William de Klerk in 93. They oversaw the transition of white apartheid South Africa into what we have today, which is a genocide. A massive government-supported mass murder of white people in South Africa. Good job there. Gorbachev won in 1990 after waging war in Afghanistan for a decade. The United Nations peacekeeping forces won in 88. They've gone on to be the world rape champions. If you want to look up what they do in Africa when they're sent to keep peace, it's kind of fun. And by fun, I mean horrific. Now, Mother Teresa won in 79. They probably should have just given it to her every year until she died, because that's sort of not a controversial one. There's nobody says anything bad about them. Martin Luther King Jr. won in 64. I think I can get behind that one. Isn't this fun? See me go through this list. Anyway, my point is that they give the prize to people who don't have anything to do with peace. To warlike people, to people with bad ideas that fail. That's who gets the Nobel Peace Prize. So don't be surprised if Trump doesn't get the Peace Prize. There's probably someone out there who's waging a war who's going to win. So why should a guy who ends war win? That would be silly. Of course, I'm criticizing the list for being premature. And of course, Korea could devolve into war at any moment. So it's not really maybe the time to do it, but you know, hey, you got those hostages released. That's a big deal. You know, most of these dictators view Americans as bargaining chips. And Kim gave them up. No problem. So we got them all back alive, which is better than we can say for Obama. So, yeah, the entire Nobel committee is just a joke. The prize is a joke. Speaking of one storied institutions becoming a complete joke, at Cornell University this week, a female student, now when I saw this originally, it was billed as being she was fighting against the patriarchy, which she didn't explicitly say in her statement herself, but in some sort of public speaking event, took off all of her clothes down to her underwear and stood in front of the class and gave her speech saying that she was doing it for women who'd been told how to dress? Minorities have been told how to dress? I don't know, it's an Asian woman. And then I dug into the story. So it turns out what really happened was it's a public speaking class. She was practicing her speech for her final paper or whatever. The professor, who's a woman, asked her if she planned to wear jean shorts when she gave her final speech on that Saturday in front of an audience, apparently. And this was something that she talked to every student about. Male and female. This girl wasn't the first one to go. Other male students had dressed inappropriately for practice. And the teacher has said that she doesn't tell the students what to wear, but she suggests to them that there is an appropriate way to dress for public speaking. Which everyone with a brain and 3 ounces of common sense knows that if you're to appear at an event before people, you should dress appropriately. So depending on what the event is, what that means, but you should dress sort of to fit into the event. This young lady, a fourth-year university student, was so horribly offended by this conversation that she ran from the room. And the students had a discussion apparently in her absence. She then returned to complete her assignment and removed her clothing. The comment that sent her out of the room was that the male student said that public speakers had a moral obligation to make their audiences comfortable. Yeah, they do. If someone's paying you to give a speech, it's because they want the audience to receive the speech. So yes, You have an obligation to dress appropriately. Now, I'm not saying that jean shorts are inappropriate. I'm just saying that the idea that you could dress inappropriately and distract from your message or distract the audience or offend the audience, that idea exists. There is an appropriate attire for each of every event in life. Something we're sadly missing. But the thing that's so shocking to me, as someone who grew up, you know, before now, is that somebody could go to university for 4 years and be offended by the idea that the professional world exists and that the professional world expects you to dress a certain way and that not dressing that way is something that drives you to tears. And then for a fierce protest demonstration where you take off your clothes. It was funnier before I read about it. I kind of wish I didn't read about it, because back when I thought it was about the patriarchy, I thought it was funnier, because obviously the patriarchy is there to provide and protect. Obviously the patriarchy, if a woman was naked, would offer her their coat or jacket. That's what the patriarchy would do. Not encourage ladies to give speeches in their underpants. But that's what she did. And then she invited the class to join her, and apparently the majority of the class took off their clothes as well. So that's what goes on at universities. Centers of knowledge and learning about the real world. They're going to leave there so prepared for the job market, so prepared for a boss who says horribly inappropriate, rude things to them. Man, they're going to be so ready. Can you imagine? I've had bosses, you know, and I'm not a woman, obviously. I've had bosses say nasty shit to me about the way someone's dressed or I'm dressed or belt's the wrong color or whatever the hell. Didn't shave. I don't like to shave every day, so didn't shave today. Doesn't offend me. She said that she did it for every time a black man was told to pull up his pants to be taken seriously. Yes, you have to pull up your pants to be taken seriously. No one takes you seriously dressed like an idiot. Just like no one takes you seriously if you talk like an idiot. If you'd like to be taken seriously, you have to join the rest of us and speak the dialect we speak and wear your clothes in a similar fashion. You don't have to buy your suit at Brooks Brothers. You can do a little something a little different. Nobody's going to go crazy if you're a little different. But you can't wear jeans where your underpants are hanging out. That's not how it works. I just can't help but think all these kids are in for the shock of their lives. I guess it's already going on to some degree, and that's what we're seeing, some of this craziness, but I think that it's just getting worse, and these kids are less and less prepared for reality. And I don't know. I can't decide if it's tragic or funny. I can't decide if it's going to be funny to watch or if they're going to start ransacking the countryside like the French Revolution over it. I don't know. It's a mess. But the Trump Nobel thing is hysterical. That anybody on the left refuses to give him credit. That anybody on the left suggests that this isn't entirely because of Trump and what Trump chose to do. Now, I'm willing to say he did it by accident. It may have been his master plan to bully Kim Jong-un and make fun of him and mock him and make him come to the table and decide to have a peace treaty and end the war and stop shooting rockets and stop developing their nuclear program and release hostages. That might have been his plan. Or it might just be Trump's personality to respond to people like Kim Jong-un that way. Like I've said before, you'd have to understand New York City and New York City real estate and construction and the mob and unions to understand the sort of adversarial nature of Trump's existence up to this point in his life. So he might have just seen Kim Jong-un as a big fat bully and decided to go after him just for fun. I don't know. But it worked. So yeah, you're okay. You're okay as far as I'm concerned. You're okay if you want to say it was an accident, that he didn't intend for that to happen, that he stumbled onto it. But if you're going to suggest he doesn't get any credit, or that's not a fantastic thing for the entire world, that it's not the best thing that's happened in international relations in the last decade, you're out of your mind. You know, we've gone from a president who created a war all over North Africa into Ukraine, who didn't end two wars he said he was going to end, who's killing kids at funerals with drones, who trades hostages to get a traitor back from Afghanistan who's joined the Taliban and deserted his own troops, who got people killed, trades known terrorists back to Afghanistan and the Taliban to get that guy back, but doesn't do anything to get the guys out of North Korea. One of them comes home in a vegetative state coma and dies a couple days later. to this. So I wasn't a huge fan of them shooting missiles in Syria, but that seems like it worked out okay. Ends the war in North Korea, gets the hostages home. I don't know. Just night and day different. Defeated ISIS, captured three or four of their top guys today. Like, how do you look at Trump's foreign policy victories and suggest anything other than their victory? Now, I get on the domestic side, you don't like tax cuts because you're a big fan of people paying lots of taxes and you don't think that's a victory. Okay, fine. We have a difference of opinion there. You know, I'm on the taxation as theft side of things, and you're on the government actually owns me and everything I produce side of things. Okay, fine. We disagree. No big deal. But is there anybody who's really on the, oh, I'm a huge fan of the status quo in Korea? I think it's awesome that there's a communist dictator who's got nuclear weapons, who's shooting cruise missiles out into the ocean and firing regular missiles into the waters of South Korea. That's cool. We're cool with that. We don't want that to change. People have lost their minds. When I was first married, I didn't have very much money, and I had to go back to North Carolina to get my things. I got married so hastily, I didn't move first. And at my new job, I came into contact with some people who work for Enterprise Rent-A-Car. And it turned out they rent vans, like regular size, like kidnapper vans with windows. Actually, it doesn't have windows. It just has a window in the back, I think, but not on the side. So he had one he could rent me, and I could afford it. And the thing was brand new, had 80 miles on it, brand new van. And I'm just going to shoot up to North Carolina and come back. Well, when he brings me the contract to sign, it's almost double the price that he quoted me. I'm like, man, what happened? I can't afford that. And he said, that's the insurance to take it out of state. I said, oh, well, yeah, I can't afford it. So he's like, well, take it off. And I said, no, man, I got to leave the state. I got to Georgia, South Carolina, North Carolina, back to South Carolina, Georgia. And he goes, nothing's going to happen. The van's only got 80 miles on it. Just drive safe. Don't get an accident. You'll be fine. I was young. Stupid. I'm like, all right, go ahead. Take it off. We take it off. I pick the van up. I take the van. I start driving. I wasn't 15 miles into Georgia when that van broke down. Check engine light came on. Power steering went. Thing stalled. And it forced it over to the side of the road. It sat there for a while. I didn't know what to do. I had a cell phone, but it didn't really matter because I couldn't call anybody because I couldn't afford to tow the thing to a shop and get it fixed. Obviously, it's a rental van, and Enterprise wasn't going to come get it because I was in the wrong state. I actually thought at some point what I'm going to have to do is tow it back to Florida and then call. Just get me over the border. But I really couldn't afford to pay for that either. So I didn't know what to do. And then it started up again. So I started driving up the I-95 there, about 20, 30 more miles, and did it again. I waited a while. Wouldn't restart. At one point, like you could imagine, I completely lost my temper. I got out of the van, I was kicking it and hitting it, yelling at it, right there on the side of the road. I got back in the van, and I didn't know what to do. I was raised Catholic. But I was not into it. And then when I got married, my wife insisted we go to her mother's church. So we started going to her mother's church. And I was open-minded, I guess. But it didn't seem like that was the thing for me. I didn't get everything they were talking about. And there on the side of the road, this broken-down van. I broke down in tears. And I was thinking about being stuck on the side of the road, and I was thinking about being stuck on that side of the road because I was an idiot. And then I started thinking about all the other things I'd done that were so idiotic in my life, and it just, I don't know, it was just like the most moving thing, and I started crying and put my head on the steering wheel, and I prayed to God, which I hadn't done in a long, long time. And I said I knew that I was stuck on the side of the road. It was my own fault. And I was where I deserved to be. And I prayed that Jesus would forgive me of my sins. Now, you can say what you want. You can be a believer, you can be not a believer. You can tell me my story's full of crap. You can tell me that all these stories are anecdotal. People give you salvation stories where their life has changed or something happened for them, whatever the case may be. But I'm here to tell you, that van restarted right after that and didn't have any more trouble. The check engine light went off. I drove to North Carolina. I loaded it up. I spent the night there. I drove back to Florida and returned it with no problems. And from that day forward, my life has been sort of a herky-jerky, stumbling mess trying to be the best Christian I can be. But that was the starting point, man. I was just admitting that I had messed up. So there you got it. That's my little story. So listen, I hope you have a great day. I hope Trump wins the Nobel Peace Prize, partly because he deserves it, and partly because I would like to see the liberal media go insane and say what we were saying back when Obama won it, that it was a stupid prize that didn't mean anything anymore. So now if we can get the New York Times and MSNBC to come out and say that the Nobel Peace Prize is meaningless, there we go. We can get rid of one more nonsensical thing in this world. So listen, have a great weekend. Thanks for tuning into the podcast, and we will catch you tomorrow. Oh, no, not tomorrow. It's Saturday. But you know what? Maybe we will do tomorrow, but maybe not. Either tomorrow or Monday. You'll have to wait and see. Thanks so much, everybody. Have a good weekend.